This is the Big Shift for Small Farms podcast. G'day listeners, Edgar's here along with my co-host, environmental educator Katie Meyer. G'day Katie.
Hey there Edgars.
Now in this episode, we're looking at the concept of citizen science. And you might be surprised, but it's actually been around for a long time. There's this story that back in 1847, a botanist in Adelaide wanted to personally collect every specimen of plant in Australia.
Yeah, and realising that Australia is not really the smallest of places, it was a bit of a daunting task. And he decided the best way to accomplish his goal was to get volunteers across Australia to collect plants for him, and then he could collate that data. Bingo, citizen science.
Yeah, and it just makes sense. Why have one person do the work of 100 or 1,000 people when, well, 100 or 1,000 people can do it? And it's not just about the numbers, but it's a great way for the community to work together in our quest of trying to understand our world and how it works.
So over the years, citizen science has evolved, but the basis is still the same. Getting members of the public to participate in scientific research with the aim to increase scientific knowledge and also to inform decision-making.
Yeah, so today we're going to be delving into some really inspiring citizen science projects that are taking place all across New South Wales. From the earth to the water to the sky, there are so many opportunities to get involved. So Katie, what are we going to kick off with?
So I was fortunate to speak with Lily Schwartz. She is really passionate about all wildlife, particularly koalas. Lily is the founder of the Hills Hornsby Rural Koala Project, and she spends countless hours bringing volunteers and ecologists and members of the community together to help look after koalas and other wildlife. So when I spoke with her, I found that her story of what motivated her to start this project, it's really interesting.
My name is Lily Schwartz, and I grew up in the Hills area in the middle of Maroota Forest. It's on the way to Wiseman's Ferry. And it's just thousands of hectares of basically pristine bushland. And I grew up in that area. And growing up there has given me a lifelong interest in wildlife and the environment. So the second thing that happened was we had really bad fires in 2002 when I was about 16. And so prior to that, we'd had an abundance of wildlife always, including koalas around us. Although koalas were really rare to see, but they were there. And after the fires, everything was just burnt to the ground. So that was really devastating. You know, and ever since then, we'd been sort of hoping that the flora and fauna would return to its former abundance.
It's a really powerful and emotional story that really compelled you to get involved in conservation work. So how did that interest evolve into the Hills Hornsby Rural Koala Project?
It started really with just my mother and myself. It only started about 2015. We would go into the bush just looking around for koalas, hoping they'd returned. Then in 2018, a local photographed a koala. So that was the first koala verified in our area since 2002. And after that, my mum, she has quite a few community contacts because she's always done community work, environmental things. So after that sighting happened, we used her connections to bring together a community meeting about it to say, what should we do? It looks like koalas might be returning to the area. What's the next step? How do we protect them? Basically, the group was formed from that meeting.
So the group included several local environment networks, members of the local fire brigade, local council, and even an academic from Western Sydney University. And after that first sighting, the group had one big question.
The question was, because it was a male, is it possible that this is just a male that's travelled across from the Hawkesbury, where there is a known population, and looking for a mate, because it was mating season at the time? Is it possible that there's only one, because that's just a transient population, meaning it just would have come across from the Hawkesbury and returned there, which never made much sense to us, but that was the question. So was it just one koala, or are they returning to the area? So we wanted to find that out. Once we found out if they were returning to the area, we wanted to find out where are they? Are there certain areas that are more suited to them than others so that we can protect them? The whole project really is to find out more about the koalas that we've got here, because nobody really knows anything at all. They're also not recognised on a state or federal level in this area. So the project is basically confirming and being able to prove that there's a breeding population here. And as well as that, finding out as much as we can about population density and distribution so that we can actually work towards conservation, or at least have the knowledge to try to protect them. They're sort of a flagship species these days. So if we can get a lot of information on them, then we may be able to protect our bushland better.
It's amazing to think that not much is known about koalas in this area, and that maybe it could be a new habitat for them. So what's the group been up to since that first sighting?
Well, they've been doing a lot, and they've got a lot of the local community involved and volunteering.
We've involved as many community members as we can, and we've got more than 800 followers on our Facebook page. So there's a lot of people who are trying to help, and basically what they do is just listen out, keep a lookout, and report back to us if they hear or see anything. We've also had individuals who have heard or seen, think they've heard, or seeing a koala, and then we go out to their property and they'll allow us to put up a song meter or a camera at their property to see if we can capture it, the sound, or even get a video of the koala.
And for those landholders out there listening, if you ever hear strange noises on your property but you're not sure if it may be a koala, the Hills Hornsby Rural Koala Project has a Facebook page with a pinned post at the top. And it has a YouTube video that has quite a wide range of different calls that koalas can make. In fact, let's listen to some of those sounds now. Wow. I'm not sure about our listeners out there, but I don't reckon I would have known that those sounds were coming from koalas. So Lily, how many have been discovered so far?
So we've started with just the one, but we've now got 19 confirmed sightings. So that means they're verified with either a photo or a recording of the call. And we've got 35 non-verified.
So how does it work with all of the different volunteers?
The core working group that actually does the majority of the work is really only a few of us. But the broader group that provides information and helps out sometimes, I guess it'd be about 15. And then we'd have hundreds of community members really that we have spoken to either once or regularly and been to their properties. So we've also had, in return, a lot of ecologists and people with a lot of experience have given us their time for free. I think it's almost like a three-tier thing because you've got the community and they've been completely like the most important part of the project because they're the ones who are out there and making reports. Then we also have lots of ecologists who are willing to help us. So the citizen science role is sort of, we're making something happen because there's no paid work in it and there's no one who's doing the research and it needs to be done. And we're working with community and with ecologists, but we're sort of in the middle of it, pulling everything together.
That's amazing that this whole project is run entirely by volunteers. And so great that ecologists also giving their time and contributing. So after everyone has reported sightings and sounds of where these koalas exist, what's the next step?
So now we've been able to get our sightings verified and non-verified onto a map and sort of merge that together with a habitat map so we can know which areas they've been seen, but also which areas should be suitable habitat. And they are getting seen in the areas that should be suitable for habitat most of the time. So that's really interesting as well. We're really only starting out with the cameras and the song meters. So at the moment, our focus is ultimately we'd like to start getting koalas sightings on them, but we're currently just recording everything that we see and hear out there.
That was a yellow-bellied glider. Just one of the species that Lily and her team have been recording.
So we've come up with quite a big fauna list of species that we've seen, which includes wombats and echidnas and, yeah, a whole range of animals.
It's amazing what you've achieved. I just love it that you start off just your mom and you, and now you have a whole huge team of, you know, ecologists and scientists and community members and everything. I guess what keeps you going like with this? It sounds like you have to put a fair bit of time and effort and energy into this. And if, you know, there's obviously no payment, what gives you that energy to keep going with it?
I guess it's just the hope that this work will count for some conservation in some way, like that we at least get recognition for how biodiverse and special this area is. And we think if we can provide as much data as possible, then we have some chance of conserving a lot of the bushland that we've got.
It certainly sounds like Lily and her team are well on their way to achieving their goals of conserving the bushland. Participation of landholders, ecologists and communities, a really great example of what citizen science is all about, and it'll certainly help promote the uniqueness of the area. So, Katie, who do we have up next?
So I spoke with Jessica Lombroso, who is both the land care coordinator and the Streamwatch coordinator for Greater Sydney Land Care, both of which are quite big roles. She gives us a glimpse of how she ended up in this space.
I once had a teacher at school that gave me a water bug net, and we caught bugs in the creek, and I just thought it was the best thing ever. That actually had opened an opportunity for me as an adult when I thought, what do I want to be doing? I actually went to TAFE to learn about conservation and land management. And that was 20 years ago. And after doing Cert 2 and 3, I became a bush regenerator. And I did a lot of remote area work, riverway restoration, and biofiltration implementation. And I've been really lucky to work in this industry for 20 years.
That's amazing. And most recently, you've been working as a coordinator for Greater Sydney Land Care. Can you tell us more about that role?
So Land Care work with landowners to help manage their land and run workshops for weed identification or native plants. We're a volunteer organisation that come together to help landowners. We promote a lot of bush care activities. So bush care, we work with councils, land cares on private land, but at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what side of the fence the weeds grow on, because if we work together, then a lot more work can be done.
Yeah, absolutely. And how about the citizen science project Streamwatch?
Streamwatch is a citizen science water monitoring program, and it started 30 years ago. And it started with Sydney Water and a group of pilot schools, schools that were concerned about fish kills and pollutions entering the creeks across Sydney, and just noticing the impact that humans and urban development were having on our waterways.
Yeah, and I guess it's all sort of interwoven or interconnected. Can you tell me how Streamwatch and land care activities overlap or how they're related?
It's a great opportunity to be able to work together from our waterways upwards. So our waterways carry a lot of nutrients and seeds that promote weed growth. And to monitor the water quality, you can tell the vegetation whether it's intact or stable or a good riparian zone. So a lot of our Streamwatch groups sit within bush care groups, which are formed from when land comes together and community care for a catchment. So a lot of our groups are either bush care, land care, schools, but we also have swamp care as well. So it's not just creeks and it's not just rivers, it's hanging swamps as well, which are waterways, and wetlands, which are really essential for the health of a whole catchment, because they retain and they filter, but they're also under urban threats as well. So it's a great opportunity for land managers and community to hold that accountability and know exactly what's happening on our waterways. We don't just test the water, but we also repair riparian zones and build wetlands to become healthy and restore them.
It's a joint effort, really, and not just landholders' responsibility to look after land. Jessica and her team provide opportunities for kids and members of the community to participate in citizen science projects that will really benefit landholders and the environment.
Yeah, and as she says, it's actually everyone's responsibility and an opportunity to look after waterways and really just have a positive impact.
We're all impacting it. It's not just down to one council or a government or Sydney Water or EPA. Waterways run through multiple LGAs and multiple councils. And if you're driving a car or you're walking a dog, we're all the ones that actually impact our water quality just by being alive. So we can either be really positive for our catchments and understand them and work with them, or we can be oblivious and work against them.
And it's not just people that can impact water quality. Natural disasters can also cause huge problems and challenges for landholders and the environment.
So land care is so big. There's a lot of land in Australia, and some of the biggest issues have been environmental impacts from natural disasters. So these floods that we had, a lot of landowners have just been utterly, not just the landowners, the riparians have been decimated. So the water volumes that have just turned 30 years of work upside down, it's hard as a landowner and a volunteer not to get disheartened about the volumes and velocities of waters that have really changed the landscape.
Natural disasters can be devastating for landholders, but by bringing groups of people together through citizen science projects, they have the support and opportunity to work together to overcome challenges.
The beauty of land care is that when we actually work together and help each other, from neighbouring land care groups to landowners to younger generations, there's a lot of people within Sydney that don't get the opportunity to be out on the land country. So we had a youth camp out where we've done big riparian corridor restorations or riparian river restorations. And we give the opportunity for people that have never planted a tree before or never been camping to come and join us and lend a hand to landowners. Sometimes we get 40 young people and passionate volunteers to come out, have a great weekend, and we switch off and we reconnect and we restore. And the outcomes are incredible, that we get people coming back each year to see the trees that they put in the ground the first year that have just gotten bigger. And to actually see a community restore a riverway just gives you such a sense of purpose, and it inspires the landowners that often feel alone, that people actually do care and do want to help and contribute. So it's a community thing, and it's about people caring for each other and our waterways and our landscapes, and learning from each other, not just about bugs, about the biota, so the life. And it's about sharing life and growing life.
I love how it's all about caring for animals, caring for the land, and caring for people. It's really a holistic view about conservation.
Yeah, and we're going to continue along that topic, shifting to a focus on birds and opportunities for landholders and birdos. So I spoke with Ben Humphreys, and he's the coordinator of the Southern New South Wales Birds on Farms project, and he tells us a little bit more about the work that he does.
I'm lucky enough to work for BirdLife Australia on Wiradjuri country here in Albury, New South Wales. So as a woodland birds project officer, I get the opportunity to engage with landholders and community to learn more about our woodland birds through citizen science monitoring on private land. We raise awareness of the threats and the actions that people can take to help woodland birds and support landholders to implement bird-friendly management approaches on their properties in partnership with local land care groups.
Ben is passionate about his job. And it's great how, with his work, he can really provide an opportunity for landholders and bird watchers to work together in citizen science projects.
So my favourite part of the job is sitting around the farmhouse kitchen table, having a cup of tea, talking about, you know, coming up with plans as to how we can save woodland birds and help people learn more about what's going on their property. So working closely with landholders and passionate local bird watchers who help us conduct citizen science bird watching surveys each season on those private properties. We've currently got over 60 landholders participating in the project, and some of those people do their own surveys and some people are assisted by local bird watchers who are keen to get out and access exclusive birding sites. We partner in the project with three local NRM champions, if you like, the West Hume Landcare, Corowa District Landcare and Holbrook Landcare Networks, and they help us support landholders to create, enhance and protect woodland bird habitat on their rural properties.
That's fantastic that there are so many like champions, as you said. Can you share with us some specific projects that landholders can do or they can implement to create this ideal woodland bird habitat?
Sure. So as we would all agree, habitat loss is the biggest threat that our woodland birds face. So land care groups have been working with passionate landholders, greening the landscape for over 30 years. So the Birds on Farms project uses birds and birding as a hook to get more people involved and help to motivate them on their journey of habitat appreciation and protection. So we're currently working with people participating in the citizen science monitoring program and offering support to help them plan their restoration projects. So whether they want to protect with fencing remnant habitat, whether they want to enhance what's underneath that remnant habitat, whether they want to create greenfield plantings of direct seeding or tube stock. We support them to pull a plan together that we can then use, or they can then use, and go and chase funding to try and implement.
Ben shares with us why and how some people get involved in these projects. And he gives us some case studies that really provide some food for thought about how things can change over the years, and particularly over generations.
There are lots of reasons why people get involved in the Birds on Farms project. And there are some excellent examples of how birds and bird watching can be used as a hook for creating change. So often in a farming enterprise, there's one partner who has some sort of connection with birds and bird watching. They might get involved in the bird monitoring as part of our project and learning more about their birds, which can then influence their bird-friendly management approaches on the property and can often rub off on the other partner. So an example would be leaving dead standing paddock trees for hollow nesting birds like superb parrots, rather than taking them out of the landscape and using them for firewood. Another good example is intergenerational change in land management, using birding as a hook for inspiring change. The example is, participants have described to us memories of granddad saying that the more we clear this country, the more money we can make. So all they did as a kid is get around cutting down trees. So in one person's lifetime, thanks to being guided by citizen science, they implement bird-friendly management approaches. That same kid who remembers cutting down trees is now a land manager planting corridors and shelter belts and blocks of native habitat for biodiversity. So a fantastic shift in attitudes over the generations to enhance biodiversity and sustainability.
That's amazing that in just one generation, there can be such a shift in perspective and understanding. And then, as you said, taking action towards positive change on landholders' properties. So have you seen that landholders have benefited from this shift, I guess now with more of a focus on biodiversity and sustainability?
Sure. So the obvious one is that we can support landholders to learn more about their birds on their property and learn how their management actions can actually help birds. For example, creating a habitat corridor can also lead to increased profitability. So by providing shelter for livestock, increases the survivorship. So Birds on Farms project, in partnership with land care groups, we can help facilitate the creation and protection of habitat to increase biodiversity on private land by providing expert advice and support the planning and implementation of their restoration projects.
It sounds like a fantastic opportunity for landholders. What about the birders? What do you reckon they get out of participating in these citizen science projects?
Some of the feedback we get from some of our passionate volunteers is that they really enjoy giving something back to the hobby that they love and get so much out of through being involved in citizen science. And I notice that while we're bird watching, we're connecting with country and we're connecting with like-minded community members, which I think is an essential part of everyone's well-being.
Yes, definitely. So could you share with us what exactly volunteers may be doing or getting involved in if they put their hand up?
Yes, certainly. So one of our biggest challenges is finding passionate birders to help us complete these surveys. We do quarterly surveys on private land. So volunteer recruitment is one of our greatest challenges, finding these passionate birders with the skills and the time to conduct these quarterly surveys. So we provide training opportunities for bird watchers in the field, which takes time, of course, And we run quarterly skills development workshops that are led by local experts who just love sharing their local bird knowledge. We would also like to help the landholders to find funding to support the implementation of their bird-friendly management actions, whether it's installing new fencing or fencing repairs to protect native woodland habitat or planting more native trees to create new habitat. We're always on the lookout for funding opportunities, whether it's getting involved in the planning of restoration projects as a landholder or whether it's getting involved in our quarterly seasonal surveys. We welcome everyone's participation in the Birds on Farms project.
That's great. Hopefully many of our listeners out there will be interested in getting involved. So obviously you work with many farmers who are members of land care groups. Could you expand a little bit about your partnership with them?
Partnering with land care groups is a big part of our project. These guys have been greening the landscape for 30 years, so they've got the experience and the know-how to deliver these projects on the ground. Our support we can offer is helping to tailor a restoration project into a woodland bird habitat plan with specific emphasis on the benefits that it'll bring to woodland birds. And often when grant funding becomes available, we all know there's a bit of a scramble to try and find suitable projects that fit those criteria. So working with land care partners, we can use these plans. They're effectively restoration projects that are budgeted and costed and ready to roll out. So we can use those to try and seek funding to help support the landholders to implement those management actions on the ground.
It's almost like it's all set up to make it happen, kind of like a win-win, right? Win for the birds and the environment, a win for the landholders.
That's right. And a win for the passionate birders who get to go out to these exclusive birding sites and regularly see the changes over the seasons of which birds are using that habitat. The volunteers and the landholders who are collecting that valuable data on what the birds are up to season after season. I see these guys as the real citizen science NRM champions. They're out there, rain, hail or shine. Bird watching, we know, is an addictive pastime and hobby. So it's great to have that sort of passion and those people creating the change, using the science to guide our conservation actions to help save woodland birds.
It's wonderful to hear about these passionate individuals who are out there on the ground and who've given so much time and energy to this endeavour, helping save woodland birds.
That's what these citizen science projects are all about. So all three of these citizen science champions that we spoke with, they really showed so much enthusiasm for the projects that they're involved in. They share with us what some of their goals are for the future and what they need to be able to continue the work that they are doing.
It's really all to do with just hoping for conservation in the long run, hoping that people care about the area and recognise the area and that the koalas are back in full force.
It takes a lot of time and effort to save critically endangered birds and restore the habitat that we've lost over the years. We need more people involved. From a BirdLife Australia perspective, our mission and vision is to save birds and save life. By 2050, birds and nature are valued, conserved and restored, sustaining a healthy planet for all people. And from a citizen science perspective, I suppose we want to see younger generations getting involved. And the NRM funding that we seek for implementing these projects, we really need a longer term approach to citizen science based funded projects. Saving endangered species and restoring habitat loss doesn't just happen overnight or in the space of a few years often. So our responsibility as a community is to evolve and I think take the necessary actions to ensure that our future generations can enjoy the birds like we do today.
I think if we can take ownership of our landscapes, if we looked at our waterways and our bushlands as our home, nature provides for us, but we also have to be custodian or help protect and maintain it.
And that's where citizen science comes in. It provides us with the opportunity to really just take that ownership and get involved. And this is just the tip of the iceberg with these projects. There are countless citizen science initiatives that landholders can get involved in. from frogs to tree hollows to ferals and more. There really is an opportunity for everyone. If you'd like to find out more, we've included a link in the show notes to the Australian Citizen Science Association, which partners with the Atlas of Living Australia, providing a comprehensive database of projects that you could get involved in.
The Big Shift podcast is proudly produced by Grow Love Project in partnership with Greater Sydney Local Land Services. Thanks to all our guests who've generously shared their time and their stories. To find out more about the opportunities they've talked about, we've provided some links in the show notes. And remember, if you like what you heard, please share it. Thanks for listening.